Hey there, this is Paul Roberts of the Security Ledger. If security and the Internet of Things are your thing, I wanted to let you know about a great event Security Ledger is hosting on June 19th in Boston. It's the fifth Security of Things Forum. It's a full day of great content on securing the Internet of Things. If you're interested in learning more or attending the forum, point your web browser to the event website, securityofthings.com, to learn more or to register. Hello and welcome to the Security Ledger podcast. I'm Paul Roberts, the editor-in-chief at the Security Ledger. In this week's podcast, episode number 98, we know that Internet of Things standards are important because there are so many of them. In this episode, we'll talk with Principal of Fractional CISO, Rob Black, about just how we've ended up with so many competing standards for securing connected devices. Rob will talk about which of them stand out and whether one day we might have one standard to rule them all.
My anticipation is there will be a major IoT security incident in the next, let's say, 3 to 5 years that results in loss of life, and that will get governments to take action and really drive forward standards or set of standards that the industry will adopt.
But first, can sound waves be used to crash a hard drive or cause a software application to malfunction? Our next guest, Connor Bolton, a graduate research assistant at the University of Michigan, was part of a team of researchers who showed that, yes, they can. Working with researchers at Zhejiang University in China, Bolton and his colleagues carried out both ultrasonic and sonic attacks on traditional magnetic hard disk drives and caused them to malfunction and crashed. I invited Connor into the Security Ledger studios to talk about his research and started out by asking him how it was he came to look at whether sound waves could be used in attacks on IT systems.
So I'm Connor Bolton, and I am a graduate research assistant at University of Michigan, PhD student there as well. You know, all computers are physical objects, and they're subject to different physical properties or electrical properties of different things, such as, you know, acoustics, electromagnetics, and various other effects. So when you start keeping that in mind from a security perspective, you realize that there are other ways other than just the typical software attacks that can be used to kind of disrupt these systems at the least. So our research was one example of that, where we took a very common component in hard disk drives and looked at the effect of sound on that hard disk drive and found out that by exploiting different physical properties such as resonant frequencies, that you can definitely interfere with the hard disk drive. And since the operating system is expecting the hard disk drive to work correctly, basically that assumption that your physical equipment will work correctly is what we kind of we break that assumption. And by doing so, it compromises the system. And we believe that there are other physical effects that can do similar things to different systems.
Talk about the sound wave-based attacks on these drives. Or how are they created, and how might they be leveraged in an attack situation?
These hard disk drives can be affected by both audible sound and ultrasound. In actuality, they cause two different issues in the hard disk drive that the operating system sees as kind of interference on the hard drive. And so the first one is where the different mechanical parts of the drive are kind of vibrated outside of their typical operation modes. And that's typically with audible sounds. And we would create these audible sounds. We just use a $20 speaker and a typical Sony speaker amplifier that you might see, you know, at your home. And we place that speaker near the hard disk drive, not on the same table. We wanted to make sure that things were separated. And we just, we played sound, single tones through that speaker and observed the different changes in the hard disk drive. The ultrasound actually affects it a different way, through something called sensor spoofing, which I won't get into, too much, but essentially, to protect the hard drive if you dropped it, you have sensors that would detect if you dropped the hard drive.
Sensors built into the hard drive itself.
Yeah. They're built into the hard drive itself. And basically, using ultrasound, you can make it think that the hard drive is falling when it's not. And so it'll put the hard drive into like a protected mode where it does something called parking the head. And by parking the head, it prevents catastrophic data loss. However, when it thinks it always, by making it think that it's always falling, it never can operate correctly. So you turn the hard drive's own sensors against itself.
Hmm. Now, you know, hard disk drives, we're talking about magnetic hard disk drives here. So a lot of moving parts in these devices. And they're generally deployed in, chassis with a lot of other things, fans and so on, that are spinning and vibrating. So aren't there tolerances built into these drives by the manufacturer? Don't they assume that there are going to be kind of environments where there's a lot of humming and vibrating and so on?
There definitely are. And the engineering that's been gone into these hard disks, the more I've investigated, it's actually phenomenal. It's amazing that these things work at all. And there are tolerances built into the systems. However, the key difference here is that in all the design, there's never this idea of an adversary that would intentionally induce these effects. And the reason why that's important is these attacks, both of them against the drive using the audible and the ultrasonic, both exploit resonant frequencies. Resonant frequencies are kind of a physical phenomenon that will affect how much a physical component is affected by a certain frequency of vibration. And so the attacker can control that frequency, whereas in the wild, it'll probably just be a random frequency that is not a resonant frequency. So essentially, the attacker has a little bit of extra control that you wouldn't find out in the wild. And because of that, that'll make it to where the drive is affected a lot more than would be typical in just a regular setting.
And again, these could be done at a frequency where the human operators or people in the proximity of these devices might not know that this attack was taking place, right?
Yes. Some of these are in the ultrasonic range, which are above human hearing.
As a practical matter, how might these attacks be used? And I guess, have you had any contact with the drive manufacturers and made them aware of this particular threat scenario?
We have gotten in contact with one or two drive manufacturers and are talking through them right now about about the attack and then how to defend against it right now. As for the first part of the question, being completely honest, the sky is not falling. And I think for most consumers, they don't really need to worry about this. I think the people that really need to worry about this are very security conscious organizations or companies to where, you know, they need to ensure that everything is secure.
Mm-hmm.
I could see this being used in something like a co-located data center. Other examples might be co-opting speakers kind of within the system that are already in place that might not be thought about. For example, in 2016, there was a fire alarm drill in a bank that the sound produced by the fire alarm actually probably did this attack. We don't know for sure, but it probably knocked out the hard disk drives in the data center, and the data center crashed.
Wow.
So that was a reliability issue. It wasn't an attack. However, it's pretty easy to imagine, if you really didn't like that company, maybe you could go in and just pull the fire alarm.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because, of course, there are hundreds of millions of computers and computer users and hard disk drives out there in the world. My guess is this could be a root cause of a lot of curious hard drive crashes that have gone unexplained.
Yeah, it could be. The amplitude of the sound that you need is quite high, and you're typically to crash the hard drive, that is, or crash the operating system that are using the hard drive, you need fairly large amplitudes for that. That being said, there's other cases besides just crashing applications and operating systems. Our research indicated, although we didn't do controlled tests for it, our research indicated that this also causes an excessive number of bad sectors, which is essentially kind of slowly breaking the drive over time as it's subject to these sounds from a physical standpoint. And there's been reports when we've talked to different data centers of where they'll have like a single spot in the data center where, for whatever reason, at that spot, no matter how many times they replace the hard drive just always seems to go bad fairly quickly. And this could be a possible explanation for that, where you have enough sound, maybe not to crash the operating systems or crash the hard drive, but to still cause some of these other effects. And we think it's plausible that that could be the case for some of these mystery drives where all of a sudden they just keep crashing.
it'd be hard to retrofit every affected or legacy device with detection software. Is the solution to just simply monitor the environment in which sensitive systems are deployed to look for unusual patterns in the ultrasonic range or even sonic range?
That would be a solution that you could certainly do. Just monitoring might solve the issue. I'd be worried if someone were able to sneak in something like a something that vibrates but doesn't produce as much noise, but it's physically vibrating like the area. You may not pick that up with microphones, but you could still possibly pick that up with accelerometers. So that's one solution. In our paper, we also talked about a software solution, which, as you pointed out, is not always the easiest thing to just update the firmware of all these drives. However, that would be, once you create that firmware update, there would be no extra cost added. And then moving forward, we also suggested a few very low-cost modifications that you could make to the hard disk drive for drives moving forward. All it would require is maybe a few extra cents of hardware just to add on to each drive that would add an extra layer of protection.
And what is the what's the path forward as people become more aware of these types of threats and attacks? What can device makers and obviously software makers, hardware OEMs do to address these concerns?
Companies should try to cooperate with some of the researchers that are doing these experiments. For researchers, it's far easier to conduct some of this research when you have a company's assistance in doing so. And just kind of keeping in mind the fact that these things exist, there are certainly fixes for a lot of these attacks. However, the trade-off is typically a monetary trade-off. So companies might have to make that decision, and it might be a tough one at certain times. However, I think what's important to note is that sometimes you don't always need this level of security. So I think it would be very interesting if companies were to maybe put a little extra money into certain products to make them more of a security version of those products and offer extra information to the systems that they're in to ensure that everything is secure in addition to maybe their low-cost products.
What are you guys working on now, you people working on now, and what's next in this line of work that you're doing?
You know, we're going to continue to look at these kind of physical layer attacks. We have a few extensions even for just hard disks. We'll have a paper that should be coming out, I think, within about a month on this, a very interesting take on some of these sound waves and hard disk drives that I'd encourage everyone to possibly look out for. In addition, just looking at various sensors that we use in our everyday lives, like the ones in phones, and that's kind of what our lab will be focusing on in the future, as well as automotive security, the sensors that are in automotive security, we'll be looking at that, and continuing also in the medical device field.
Connor Bolton, thank you so much for taking the time and speaking with us at the Security Ledger podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Up next, the 5th Security of Things Forum is happening next month in Boston on June 19th. One thing we'll be looking at hard is the fast evolving but crowded field of Internet of Things security standards. We want to answer fundamental questions such as, how do we end up with so many standards? And will we ever be able to settle on one to govern the security of connected devices? To help sort through that issue, I invited Rob Black into the studio. He's going to moderate our panel at next month's forum. And in this conversation, Rob and I talk about the different IoT standards that are out there and how the Internet of Things may be too broad to ever be governed by a single security standard. To start off our conversation, I asked Rob to talk about the different standards that are out there, which ones he likes, and what they have in common.
Hi, I'm Rob Black, Managing Principal for Fractional CISO.
And Rob, welcome to the Security Ledger podcast.
Paul, great to be here.
So glad to have you on the show. We're talking today about a very weighty topic, which is Internet of Things security standards. And there are a couple things going on. One is that it's going to be a talk that you're going to help manage coming up at the end of June for the Security of Things Forum on this very topic. But it's also, it's something that's kind of rolling along in the news cycle as well. As the IoT picks up speed, increasingly people are saying, we need standards, and the lack of standards is impeding the growth and adoption of the Internet of Things. And I know from talking that this is an issue that you have some experience with just in your work at Fractional CISO. So first of all, I think maybe just give us the elevator pitch on Fractional CISO. What is it? And then talk about kind of how this IoT standards issue has come up in your work with your clients.
So at Fractional CISO, we provide cybersecurity leadership to companies. So we help them on a part-time basis, either with a continuing relationship or on a project basis, to help them really set their strategy, set up their cybersecurity vision, and then perform a variety of cybersecurity leadership tasks like risk assessments or setting policies and procedures or helping organize the team on prioritizing the work that they do. And so that's what we do. And you're absolutely right. About 6 months ago, one of my clients asked me for some help with what IoT security standards they should be following. And I had a really positive impression of some of the standards, really particularly one or two. But I started to dig into the standards from a practical standpoint. And I found that they've done a lot of great research. They're focused on a lot of the right things, like updating devices, authentication, cryptography, managing the secrets, security testing, managing the overall system. So those things are great, you know, really good focus on the activities and what should be done. But from a standard standpoint, I found many of the standards to be pretty lacking. And you know, this is one area where I think the industry is moving to make some improvements. But you know, there really are some challenges for those folks like my clients or you know others in the industry that are trying to do the right thing, trying to follow some of these standards, and are really having some challenges doing that. And let me just give a couple of examples. So OTA Trust Alliance, IoT Security Privacy and Trust Framework, has a really nice document. It's laid out, it's numbered. But when you try to apply it, and I'll just pick on number 9 on the list just because it's pretty unwieldy, it's this huge paragraph, and I mean huge, and it has in it, by my count, 10 different measurable things in there, including unit testing, system testing, acceptance testing, regression testing, threat modeling, third-party libraries and source code, how things should ship with the latest code, what you do on reboot. And you know, in terms of having a vendor or a manufacturer actually apply the standard, you know, imagine if you do 8 of the 10 things, you know, how do you score on this number? It's very difficult to apply. So I found this challenge with a number of those standards where standards are really not that atomic. And additionally, there are some other challenges, and some has to do with the precision of the language. One of my favorites, and I won't point out which standard this is, it says, developing secure software requires thinking about security. And then there's some other details there. So I was thinking, if you brought an auditor in to measure that particular measurement, how do you show requires thinking? You take a picture of someone sitting at their desk thinking about security. And you know, obviously, you could potentially measure things in other ways, but the precision that's applied in some of these standards is really lacking. So, you know, from my perspective, the really 4 things that we need for these standards to really gain some traction. And that is it based on a framework? Is it measurable? Is it numbered, which I think does make a really big difference, and is it atomic or near atomic, so that you can break things out? And you know, one example, not an IoT, that I'll give is NIST 800-171, which is for controlled unclassified information. That one is great at being atomic. Everything is very numbered. It's very measurable. You can really understand if you do or don't pass the standard. And you know, I think that's one place we really need to move with IoT cybersecurity standards to allow for adoption. And then that will help not only with security adoption, but then probably for IoT to pick up steam and for the industry to be more successful.
I think one indication of how important IoT standards are is how many of them there are.
Yes. You're not kidding. So the National Telecom and Information Administration put out a catalog of existing security standards for IoT.
NTIA,
you got it. Yep. And it's 50 plus pages long, and essentially each page is a different standard. There's some header stuff in the beginning. But I think the challenge is that if you are a product manufacturer or if you're applying IoT into your environment, how do you utilize these standards? And, you know, getting a 50-page catalog of different standards is not necessarily going to get you in the right spot. You know, I do think there's going to be some some time before the industry kind of focuses on one or two of these standards and they become more of an industry norm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think when we look at situations in which standards have really helped in the past, I think, of course, about like wireless networking, right? But it strikes me that Internet of Things is a much bigger bucket of things than just wireless networking. And I'm wondering, is part of the problem here maybe that it's too big of a beast to wrap your arms around with a single set of standards? That maybe this problem is going to be solved by a whole bunch of more focused standards addressing specific pieces of this, kind of parts of the beast.
I think you are exactly right. I mean, IoT is really a market of markets. So when you think about IoT, you may be thinking about your home automation stuff, but a medical device manufacturer is thinking about what's going on in the hospital, and financial institutions may be thinking about ATM machines. So thinking that one standard is going to govern all those is probably unrealistic. And you even look at what's happening today, for instance, with the FDA issuing guidance on medical devices. So their cybersecurity pre-market and post-market guidance, they actually have some really good things that they're requiring medical device manufacturers to do. I think we will start to see some more of this different industries taking on different activities for cybersecurity standards. Now, however, that's probably going to leave some significant gaps in the market because every market is not going to be covered. There's still probably a need for overall IoT security standards as maybe more of a default or as a basis that these different vertical markets can base their standards on.
So some of the standards that I know Security Ledger has written about that have, for example, all join and OCF you mentioned. Do any of these, we're a number of years into this now. I mean, have any of them really taken wing? Or are they all kind of sitting there flapping their wings on the ground and waiting to take off with a lot of promise, but not much to show for it?
I would imagine that the one that's going to win, maybe either doesn't exist yet or it's going to be a new revision of one of these. I happen to really like the Industrial Internet Security Framework by the Industrial Internet Consortium. I think it has great guidance and information in there. But again, it's more of a framework, let's say, than a standard. So I can imagine either, a new emerging standard to come out that's, let's say, more palatable or easier to adopt, or potentially, unfortunately, I could imagine a very bad cybersecurity event occurring and then the government stepping in and saying, here's the standard you're going to use. So I don't know that any one of the existing ones is going to be the winner. It would be interesting to see, but none of them, if you talk to five different people in the space, I think they probably would have five different answers on their preferred standard. If one at all.
Right. And for Internet of Things, I guess we're kind of talking like monolithically about standards, but there are standards for all different things. There are standards for interoperability to make sure different connected products can speak a lingua franca. But then you and I are really talking about the security problem.
Yeah.
I guess, as you just said, is a standard even really what we're talking about, or is it more just a threshold or a competency that connected products need to have, a la something like Underwriters Lab and electrical
yeah.
devices? That you just need to pass these tests and then you're going to get a stamp of approval and you can go out and sell your products on the market. And that's how the standard's going to
work. Yeah, I think there is a place for that type of standard. But, to me, and let's actually pick on the Underwriters Lab cybersecurity test, which I think, from looking what they're doing, they set the gold standard probably on cybersecurity testing anyway for IoT. One of the challenges they've had is they've had a very small number of companies go through that program. And what I liken it to is they're providing the AP calculus test to the industry, but yet, we need the test on long division in elementary mm-hmm. school. So don't let what I say discount what they're doing. I think they're doing great stuff. I just think, to move the industry forward, we're going to have to work through long division and algebra and all those other things to get up to that AP calculus level of competency.
Let's talk about commonalities. I mean, when you look, and you've looked at a number of these standards, although I think there are like 90 of them, and I don't expect you've reviewed all 90. But as you look at these, what are there commonalities in terms of what they're trying to accomplish? Again, talking specifically about security here, are there commonalities between these in terms of what they're asking device makers to do or what problems they're trying to solve?
So there are absolutely commonalities. I think, you know, some of the things that you'll see is one is a lot of focus on the device and how the device is particularly managed and authentication and encryption and communication and all those things on the device. Also a lot of focus on how the device is updated, which is obviously very important because as new threats emerge, you're going to need to be able to manage those threats. You need to push an update out there. As new vulnerabilities exist or come to light, you need to be able to update those devices to manage that. There's I would say pretty consistently, there's a monitoring requirement across many of these standards. You know, are you actively monitoring your devices? So yes, there's a certain set of commonality. I actually think there's a lot of consensus over what needs to happen. It's just not laid out in a clear enough manner that can drive people who don't want to invest a ton to take actionable steps. And that's why, you know, when I was talking back to this, you know, having really atomic, measurable standards, that's just so important. So that way you can answer the question, do we do X? Yes, we do. Do you do Y? Yes, we do. And then one, you can understand what you're doing. And then secondly, your customers can understand what you're doing. So, you know, that is to me the missing piece with all these IoT cybersecurity standards. I don't see a real big fundamental disagreement over what folks should be doing.
It seems like we see this dynamic over and over again, which is that there's, you know, really pretty healthy, robust data collection, data harvesting from mobile devices or whatever, but then just really crappy security on the back end for the services that are consuming that data and using it. And it's this kind of weakest link phenomena that just plays out over and over again.
Yeah. The comprehensive nature of IoT security is really important. And you know, you asked the question earlier about would a vendor solve this problem? I think it's possible they would help solve the problem. It seems to me that they are attacking the problem really from the environmental side. So if you're operating an IoT system, you put in this, or you, if you're operating IoT equipment, you put this in and it lets you know if your smart TV is unpatched or if there's a threat to it or your cameras or whatever else is in your environment. But that's certainly not a holistic view of the world. That's really just where the devices are operating. So, you know, the comprehensive nature of it just hasn't happened yet. And I guess we will see if a vendor will help solve that problem.
Okay, so you're going to be talking about this in about a month at our fifth Security of Things Forum. So first of all, thank you for lending your voice and your expertise to our forum. Just give us a highlight of what you and your panel are going to be discussing and who's going to be there.
So first, Paul, thanks for the opportunity to speak there. Really, you know, obviously love talking about IoT security. I think it's going to be a great show. And
no, thank you, Rob.
This is going to be a great session. So all your listeners should come. It's in Boston in about a month. And
Boston Convention Expo Center, part of PTC LiveWorks.
So we have a really strong panel. So we have Brian Russell coming. He's, among many things, the chair of the Cloud Security Alliance IoT Working Group. Put a lot of thought into this, and he's, you know, really kind of a thought leader in the industry. We have Will Brown on the panel. He's responsible for physical security products at Johnson Controls. He and his team were the first to put product through that UL cybersecurity testing, their level 3. I think it'll be, you know, really good to understand, you know, yeah, what that entailed. We're going to go through somewhat systematically some of the top standards, talk about the strengths and weaknesses of them, and really have a strong understanding of where the industry is, what standards are the most mature, and what folks in the audience can do to kind of take some of the most valuable information away from the standards. So we're anticipating, yeah, a really good session.
Do you think are we gonna get there with standards? I mean, we're seeing the problems all around us, right? We're seeing the Mirai botnets. We're seeing the, you know, WannaCry and NotPetya attack with location smart, you know, just kind of loose, sloppy handling of data and aggressive data harvesting. Are we going to get there? Are standards or frameworks or whatever we want to call them going to be an answer? Or is this a problem that I guess is bigger than any particular standard?
So I have a, I'll start by stepping back for a second. I have a big picture view of a very positive view of IoT security. I think in the short term, it's going to be a pretty bumpy road. You know, my anticipation is there will be a major IoT security incident in the next, let's say, 3 to 5 years that results in loss of life. And that will probably get governments to take action and really drive forward standards or set of standards that will the industry will adopt. So unfortunately, I think it's going to have to be a very bad event for that to happen. But when it does, I do think that will be a catalyst for change. And I think long term, there will be cybersecurity standards that vendors will follow.
Rob Black of Fractional CISO, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us on the Security Ledger podcast.
Great. Thank you, Paul.
It's always a pleasure. If you're listening to this podcast and like what you hear, check out our conference coming up in June. The Security of Things Forum is June 19th at Boston Convention and Exhibition Center. It's part of PTC's LiveWorks conference, and you can find out more information at securityofthings.com.